The KYMN Climate Show is a monthly feature here on 95.1 The One and AM 1080, discussing changes in climate and the science behind it. And now, your hosts, Alan Anderson and Bruce Moreland.
Welcome to the KYMN Climate Show with Bruce Moreland and Alan Anderson, where we discuss climate issues in the news and then dig into the stories behind those stories. Today, our overview is that we're going to tell a couple stories, and then we're going to talk about the political divide and introduce a team that is working to help build bridges. So, Alan, what have you heard in recent weeks?
So, Bruce, I've got a report on an article entitled The Great Climate Migration, and it was a study that came out last month. And essentially, what they've done is this team of researchers studied what are the reasons that have caused people to migrate in the past, and when they did migrate from particular areas, where did they tend to go? And of course, part of what they learned is that people migrate primarily for economic or security reasons. Either there's war and danger, or there's failing crops and drought and so forth. And what happens is that people normally move to the nearest big city out of the country as step one. But then if they don't find any relief to their troubles in the big city, then they're likely to move cross borders towards other countries. And we saw this, of course, in the Syrian war, when all kinds of Syrians in particular fled first to the cities because of a drought. And then when things deteriorated there, then they fled the country and they went to particularly towards Turkey and Europe. And that was maybe 2 million people. And that group of 2 million migrants caused all kinds of upheaval, as you will recall from the news at the time. Well, this study now then is taking what they learned about that to what's going to happen with the migration caused by climate change when there's increasing drought, including in some breadbasket areas. There's increasing heat along the equator, and it's anticipated that even within the next 50 years, some places will be too hot during the summer for people to be outside at all, which, of course, in a rural economy where farmers have to work outside all summer, that's not going to work out very well. And a lot of those people may have to become migrants. And then in other places, like the Mekong Delta in Vietnam, where 18 million people live on the delta, but it's anticipated that in the next 50 years, they may all have to leave the delta because of rising sea levels. And so they're suggesting that climate change is probably going to cause the greatest wave of global migration ever seen in world history. And we're already having trouble with migration from Central and South America, people coming north to the U.S., mainly for economic and security reasons. And what's going to happen if things are even hotter? And you'd have to say, we would be far more intelligent and far more compassionate if we would redouble our efforts now to stop climate change from progressing. And that would help head off this type of disaster.
Right. Can you remind me who it was that said that the first world, meaning the wealthier nations, can either work on the problem now and help people stay where they are, help them adapt and mitigate, and we can help solve the climate problem, or we can plan on greeting them on the beach when they arrive, and then what two choices do we have? We can either shoot them or we can welcome them. And it was one of these places that's going to generate migrants. Do you remember who that was, by any chance?
I don't remember the name, but it was a leader of a small Polynesian island country that's literally watching their country slowly flood from rising sea levels.
Right, and I think the right answer is to help them where they are.
Help them where they are by working hard right now and strenuously to arrest and stop further climate change.
Indeed. I thought I'd interject a slightly positive story since most of our stories are kind of gloomy lately. The IPCC has population growth models, and they need those because population is a driver for carbon, right? The more people there are, the more food you need, the more transportation you're using and all that. And they have good news that their population growth models are now looking like the peak population, instead of being 12 billion people, is going to be something more on the order of 9. Now, that's still 2.5 or 1.5 billion more than we have today. So it's a big jump, but it's not as bad as it used to be. And they thought that a good portion of that was due to the change in the way we're educating women and girls around the world. And it's interesting to me as a, you know, kind of a political wonk to note that in some countries, educating women is a political problem, not just a problem of money.
Right.
And that always reminds me that our politics can often get in the way of solutions when we don't even think about how much it can be a problem. So,
right.
So our third story, what do you got there?
So our third story, the headline is, Major New Climate Study Rules Out Less Severe Climate Warming Scenarios. And essentially, it's about something called climate sensitivity. And climate sensitivity is what will happen to the temperature if we double atmospheric CO2 from the pre-industrial 280 parts per million up to 560 parts per million. And the temperature that results from that doubling is called climate sensitivity. And for an awful long time, scientists have said, well, that sensitivity is around 3.0 degrees and Fahrenheit. And that's high, but the new research says that now there's a 95% chance that that number is actually going to be 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is equal to about 2 degrees Celsius. And at that level, the Earth will be suffering dangerous effects, disruptively hot rising sea levels, intolerable heat waves in some countries, and extreme weather and permanent damage to different ecosystems. Now, that's not very cheery, but on the other hand, as Thomas Paine said before the American Revolution, I'd rather know the truth so that I can act on it than to pretend that it's not happening. And so I'd like to just encourage the audience to consider that if you can really get that inculcated into your soul, then we obviously need to take action. If we love our children and grandchildren and we care about future generations, we have to do something to prevent this from getting any worse, and we need to take action. And a good question would be, what action? Well, we'll talk more about that a little later in the show, but one thing you can do is join the bipartisan, nonpartisan Citizens Climate Lobby. You can go to their website, click the join button, and it costs you nothing to join, because what we're trying to do is enlist millions of members who say, I want my government to take action on climate change. And then lower your own carbon footprint and spread the word. And you can get more information about this from the action steps if you go to the KYMN website and scroll down to the climate show and to today's show, and you'll find a list of action steps there. So, Bruce, what's your other story?
Well, before we go there, you're going to send me that list of action steps, right? Because right now I'm the guy that has to put all that stuff up on the web, and I don't have a thing to put up there right now.
I will. We've actually posted that list before in earlier shows, but we'll get it posted on this one also.
Okay, cool. All right, our last story today before we go to our special guests is about the political divide. And we are today more divided than at any time in recent history. So I thought I would mention some ancestral divides. And we all know about the divide in the 1850s in the U.S. The division was over slavery. And we know where that led, and it was not a good thing. In Spain, the division was between the royalists, who supported the authoritarian monarchy, the fascists, if you will, and the Republicans, who supported a more Republican form of government. And that was a shooting war The Germans used it as an excuse to test out their war machines. We've all seen the painting by Picasso, Guillermo, I think it is. Forgot to look it up. But anyway, you know immediately which painting I'm talking about because it's about the attack from the air on the civilian population. So we know where that is. That's an example of an ancestral divide. And then, of course, in the 1960s, the U.S. was divided very strongly over the question of social justice and civil rights. And there was a huge amount of shuffling of political alliances as the Blue Dog Southern Democrats suddenly found themselves being ousted from their party. And it has caused ripples all the way down. So those are examples of divides. But let's look at joins. Let's look at the flip side to that. And the first one that comes to mind is in 1770, United We Stand. I mean, we can all see the heroic, you know, Minuteman standing there with his rifle and ta-da-ta-da-ta-da. But you got to remember that the Revolutionary War was actually a civil war. And it's estimated that 20% of the people were thought to be loyalists, loyal to the crown. And maybe another 20% were actively interested in rebellion.
The Patriots.
The Patriots, exactly. And those two groups basically had a brutal civil war over escaping from the British while the British were sending an army over here to enforce us to stay together. And, you know, that's the Revolutionary War, but it was not a period of pure, you know, kumbaya togetherness, right?
Yeah, in fact, there was that 60%, 20% on both ends, and the 60% in the middle were just farming and raising their families and didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Exactly, exactly. And luckily, there was no Twitter or Facebook back then to enrage them. So, and then in 1941, we had a common threat. Remember the common threat in 1941? It was the World War II, right? And we saw that as a common threat, and we fought. We thought we were all, you know, all together in on that. But the togetherness only lasted a short while because there was a large contingent of non-interventionists, people that wanted to stay out of European wars. You know, they were tired. We had just spent a bunch of time and money and treasure and lives in World War I in Europe, got nothing out of it, and now we're being asked to go back in. There's a lot of pushback there. You know, it was not at the level of the Vietnam War pushback, but it was a political divide in the country. Is should we really be getting involved in foreign entanglements? Who was the first president again? President Washington? Didn't he warn us about foreign entanglements?
He did.
All right. So we've always had a strong isolationist viewpoint. And, you know, I'm not sure how useful it is. Anyway, and then 2001 is another example of a time when we had shared interest in a problem. We were attacked. And for a brief time, we were highly, you know, coordinated. Everybody was all up, you know, saluting the flag and feeling very patriotic. And then division starts, and you get the anti-war people. And it's always interesting to me because as a Republican, I get to talk to the anti-war activists within the Republican Party. And they have to demonstrate sometimes that they're really Republicans and conservatives because some people in the party think that being anti-war is a lefty thing, and the truth of the matter is, no, it's a Republican thing, too. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which side you are on the war issue, if the Republican activists can't find the Democratic activists because the two of them aren't allowed to talk to each other because of their echo chambers. And those echo chambers are what caused one of our biggest problems in our politics, which is the high polarization that we see today. And I'm going to tell a brief story about one time I'm presenting to a Rotary Club about Braver Angels. And I'll remind everybody, Braver Angels is a national organization dedicated to reducing polarization. And we'll hear more about that in our interview coming up. But in the meantime, I'm talking about Braver Angels. And I mention a Rotarian magazine cover that was about climate change. And that created more blowback because the Rotarians were not of a united front, but leadership didn't think about that, and they thought they were a united front, and it turned out that there's division in that. So I was talking about Braver Angels as a possible way to address your polarizations. So anyway, here we are in our echo chambers, and we talk to each other, and we get more extreme. We get some groupthink going and some form of bullying within the group, and then we're amazed that we can't reach across the aisle to have a conversation.
Indeed.
So today we have some special guests who are working to prevent some of this polarization that we've just described. Alan?
And I'd like to introduce those special guests. we have Beth Mallow and Bruce Moreland. We'd like them to each do a brief introduction of themselves. So, Beth?
Sure. So I am in Nashville, Tennessee. My name is Beth Mallow. I am the leader of a civil discourse group called Common Ground Nashville, where we discuss issues across the political spectrum, ranging from local issues like housing to national issues like guns, immigration, climate. And I'm also a physician in sleep medicine and autism research.
Very cool. It's Bruce Moreland. I'm the other co-chair of the Braver Angels Action Team. I am a twice-retired mathematician who spends my volunteer time working with Citizens Climate Lobby on climate change as chair of the Conservative Caucus. And I spend time working with Braver Angels as a red delegate. And we are both the co-chairs of the Braver Angels Action Team in Citizens Climate Lobby.
And I might mention that co-chairs of Braver Angel groups need one red and one blue. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm the red, and you might notice that I'm wearing a blue shirt in the studio, and that's as homage to my blue inner blue self, the other part of me.
And you guys can't see me, but I'm wearing a red shirt because we like to compliment each other, right, Bruce?
Exactly.
So, Bruce and Beth, what is CCL and what is Braver Angels?
Okay, well, I'll start with Citizens Climate Lobby, CCL. It's a national, or actually it's an international, organization comprised almost totally of volunteers like Beth and I. It is dedicated to bringing to bear a free market answer to the increasing political demands to address climate change. For example, in the congressional district here, CD2, we estimate that over 66% of the voters want Congress to take action on climate change. And the solution that Citizens Climate Lobby is proposing is a border-adjusted, gradually increasing, revenue-neutral carbon fee and dividend. And that's the method preferred by economists, and CCL is dedicated to getting one in place. In addition to co-chairing the Braver Angels Action Team, as I said, I'm chair of the Conservative Caucus, where I work to help spread the conservative message. The market-based solution is the one that's much preferred by free market conservatives. Beth, Braver Angels.
Yeah. Of course. So Braver Angels is a national bipartisan organization similarly comprised almost exclusively of volunteers. And today, there's evidence to suggest that we are now polarized, probably more polarized than we've been since the Civil War. We're in what some are calling a cold Civil War, right at the moment when a spreading pandemic, vast economic trouble, and other national and global challenges call upon us to support each other like never before. So we do not accept this cold civil war. At Braver Angels, we do not accept this division. We reject the normalizing of this extreme polarization, and we say no to the breakdown of political and social life that it brings. The work that we do is about restoring civil trust in the USA. It's about healing the wounds between left and right. It's about challenging institutions to be better, building community together, and discovering what it means to be American in our time. Our work is about supporting a more perfect union. Our work is about inspiring the beloved community. At Braver Angel, simply put, our work is about building a house united.
Very good. And why did the two of you want to form a partnership between CCL and Braver Angels?
Well, we call this a collaboration, and the part of the answer is that echo chambers, as we've discussed, can divide an organization even while the organization is united in its mission. Braver Angels is all about healing divisions.
So Braver Angels is clear. They don't endorse any organization, and they also try to avoid partnerships, but they do welcome collaborations that bring Braver Angels principles to basically any organization that believes in strengthening the principles of democracy. And Bruce and I are both Braver Angels and members of CCL, and we see CCL as a great opportunity to practice our Braver Angel skills.
And what's the mission of Braver Angel Action Teams?
Well, as a Red, my goal, conservative, my goal is to have the Braver Angels Action Team help CCL stay bipartisan, because I believe strongly that being bipartisan is the only path to lasting success. We found it more and more difficult to keep our carbon fee and dividend as an across-the-divide position.
And I'm a blue, progressive or liberal, and I would like to see Braver Angels help CCL members be supportive of their conservative friends and colleagues, even if we don't always agree on policy.
And what sort of training does Braver Angels provide?
So Depolarizing Within workshops are our signature workshop right now, and they're really useful when people want to minimize their echo chamber language and reasoning. So we're collaborating with CCL to present the Braver Angels Depolarizing Within workshops to CCL volunteers.
And what's the response? What has the response been from communities so far with Braver Angels?
Well, in CCL, the leadership is full on in support, because they really know how important it is to be able to communicate across that aisle, both within the organization and with people outside of the organization. And the volunteers who have taken the online depolarizing workshop, which, by the way, Beth managed one of the last ones, and really was well received. They've all been well received. We've probably trained, what, 300 or 400, maybe close to 800 people in these workshops. That's 2.5 hours commitment to learning how to be depolarizing. And it's getting very high praise from every attendee. I mean, we take a survey at the end, and the enthusiastic support is really, really there.
Yeah, and Braver Angels is super excited for the opportunity to bring our workshops to CCL to help build a stronger team for CCL.
How can our listeners help?
They could join CCL, Citizens Climate Lobby, at no cost. I'd like them to join the Braver Angels Action Team if they want to learn more about how Braver Angels methodologies and reasoning can help within CCL. And they might consider joining Braver Angels itself, which is another organization that's well worth the time and the effort.
And
with that,
Beth, any last comments?
I would just say that it's so easy to feel demoralized right now in our country. And the work that Bruce and I do gives us hope. For me, it's been my antidote to COVID-19, to all that we're reading about in the news right now, the toxic depolarization. I just find that this work gives me inspiration, hope, and great energy to keep going.
Well, I'd like to give a special thanks to our special guest today, Dr. Beth Malo and of Braver Angels, and to our own Bruce Moreland of Citizens Climate Lobby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for links to today's story, please see the KYMN website and look under Programs for the Climate Show. And feel free to send us questions at climateshow@kymnradio.net, and we'll try to get answers back to you.
And next month, on Wednesday, September 2nd at 11 a.m., we'll be discussing drawdown and some of the research on things that work right now, things that you can do in your own backyard to help with this problem. Don't miss it.
So, God willing and the crick don't rise, we'll be here next month with another edition of The Climate Show. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the KYMN Climate Show, airing the first Wednesday of every month here on 95.1 FM and AM 1080. Your hosts have been Bruce Moreland and Alan Anderson. Copies of today's show are available for podcast at kymnradio.net.